Lately, I've been using a new product that I really like. It's called Superbeads. It's based on Nobel Prize winning research and the nitric oxide principle. Nitrates are converted to nitric oxide in the body, which is the secret to Superbeads' activity. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeads.com. That's 800-738-2198, intelligentbeads.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's subject, integrative rheumatology. Yeah, we've covered a lot of integrative fields of medicine. We've talked integrative gastroenterology with Dr. Gerard Mullen. We've talked integrative neurology with Dr. David Perlmutter. But this is actually a historical first. Our first conversation with a true integrative rheumatologist, Dr. Ailey Cohen, practices near Monroe, New Jersey, and she is also she's board certified in rheumatology and integrative medicine, and she's also an expert in environmental medicine, studying the effects of toxic chemicals and harmful environmental substances on the body. And so we're talking in part one. We introduced the subject of that sometimes the mischief that occurs in the body, you know, whether it's in the joints or, you know, other diseases, rheumatological diseases, scleroderma can permeate the entire body. Lupus can ravage virtually every organ of the body. The kidneys are damaged. But some of this now theory leads us to believe that some of this starts in the GI tract. Can you lay that theory out for us?
Yeah, I actually find this really fascinating. I guess I'm in the right field when something gets me really excited about a new finding. You know, it's very interesting when I heard that there's an illness called C. difficile, which is an infection that essentially has ravaged hospitals, both community and academic, across this country, and really not internationally, but in this country it's pretty dramatic because the antibiotics used to knock it out are really resistant now at this point, and many, many thousands of patients die every year from C. difficile infection, and it really involves a lot of diarrhea, and people lose their water content. And it's a very dramatic illness. And one doctor, and I wish I knew the person's name, decided to do a fecal transplant for his dying patient, and that meant taking a healthy person's stool, which I believe was the spouse, and mixing it with saline and using it as a suppository in this patient who was literally, you know, just wasting away. And actually, within a day or two, I believe the patient walked out of there alive and healthy. And what it really, you know, was what was remarkable, of course, was that, you know, you're looking at someone's bowels, which with all their bacteria, and replenishing the bowel with someone with the feces of someone who's very healthy. And so it really woke me up to the idea, and many, many others, obviously, researchers as well, it's a hot topic now, that perhaps the 100 trillion bacteria that live happily in our small intestine, which happens to be 20 feet long, if you were to, you know, fillet it out and stretch it out, we have about 5 pounds of bacteria that are in our small intestine living happily. And those bacteria are very critical to the health and well-being of our body, and certainly to our immune system. And the concept is that when we wash out the bacteria with a whole bunch of antibiotics or a really unhealthy diet, which we're still trying to figure out what kind of unhealthy diet would do it, comparatively, we can see that the gut doesn't do well, and autoimmune diseases can be associated with that. So there's a whole movement towards gut health and doing things for your gut that you may not see and feel, but really is doing well for the bacteria that live within us and serve so many health purposes.
Well, there's actually one condition where they actually have specifically traced the presence of a certain bacteria to the activation of this disease. It's a genetic disease. It's ankylosing spondylitis. You're very familiar with it.
Oh, sure.
HLA-B27 is mm-hmm. the gene or the locus of the whatever the genetic trigger mm-hmm. for it. And mm-hmm. it seems that if you have that gene and you have the presence of Klebsiella infection in your gastrointestinal tract, it may activate the disease, which is...
Right. Correct. And that was a long time ago that people, but no one really jumped on the bandwagon. Also, Yersinia is an infection that has been associated with ankylosing spondylitis and chlamydia. So there are some infections that we know if you have that infection, you have a predisposition to getting ankylosing spondylitis, which is an immune system disease that is ongoing and chronic. And so something has tripped up the immune system based on the gut and the creatures living in the gut. And so now there's findings of associations between certain gut bacteria and lupus and certain gut bacteria and perhaps MS and, you know, multiple sclerosis. So there's new information. Research is certainly ongoing. But what that means in practical terms as a clinical physician is, you know, what can we tell patients to do so they are empowered to really keep themselves healthy when it comes to the gut, and how the gut functions and keeping it, the barriers between the bad areas and the good areas, and which is our bloodstream, keeping that clean and not letting toxins go through and having...
It's the so-called leaky gut syndrome,
leaky gut.
Exactly. Intestinal permeability. Could you just
exactly.
elaborate a little bit on that theory, how that
sure.
might impact rheumatological disorders?
Absolutely. Well, the gut is really a tube. It goes all the way from your mouth down to the anus, and we have a tube. And, you know, that tube is a very long tube, but we generally have food on one side, which gets broken down into waste, and we have our bloodstream on the other side, which where all the nutrients cross over, and as well as chemicals and dyes and coloring and those toxins as well. And so when the gut, which resides on this small intestine material on the tissue, gets irritated, when the tissue gets irritated from for whatever reason, whether it's gluten or carrageenan or chemicals, the tissue gets red, swollen, and the cells actually become more permeable because their junctions are less tight. So in other words, the bad stuff crosses over the barrier into our bloodstream. And the body, the human body, looks at that as an invader and doesn't know any different and will set off an immune system response. Such as perhaps a flare in lupus where joints get swollen and, other tissues become swollen like the kidney. And so depending on what the diagnosis is, that's sort of how the clinical symptoms will show up. But the idea is that you may not feel this permeability, you may not know what's going on, and it happens at a very microscopic level. And so a lot of what the challenge is to teach patients to eat in a way that may not reward them immediately in terms of what they're doing, but really is good for prevention and long-term health of the gut and keeping that gut as solid as possible. So,
and what are some of the suggestions for restoring balance to your GI tract?
Sure. So one thing is that, you know, number one is you want to try to avoid it. Antibiotics when they're not necessary, and certainly they are necessary in many, many situations. But in this country, we do over-prescribe antibiotics, and what happens with antibiotics is that you actually wipe out the good bacteria with the bad bacteria, and it's kind of like a one-size-fits-all. Baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. And so you really only want to take antibiotics when they are really necessary, because it can take up to 6 months or even a year on some of these studies they've done to show that the bowel corrects itself back to normal after you've wiped out all the bacteria. And so it's a slow process to regain your bowel strength. So that's number one, is avoidance of things that could be detrimental to the gut. So, again, colorings, pesticides, chemicals, and carrageenan, anything that irritates the gut. And then in terms of what you want to do to bolster the gut, there are probiotics, which are bacteria that you're actually eating or swallowing a pill with a probiotic that has many different varieties of microbiota, which is the different bacteria, and you're basically adding it to the gut to let it stay there and to basically replenish itself. There's also prebiotics, which is actually what you would consider the food that feeds the bacteria in your gut. And those are foods that have, are fermented. Fermented foods are wonderful and healthy for the gut, such as kimchi, which is a Korean-type food, and natto, which is fermented soybean, N-A-T-T-O, sauerkraut, anything that's fermented is really healthy for the gut bacteria that lives there. So you can feed the bacteria, you can add the bacteria, and all of that is really healthy for building up good bowel strength in terms of preventing the bad stuff getting into the good side of the body.
So something that must keep you awake at night as a rheumatologist is, you know, that one of the first-line tools for many of these rheumatological diseases are NSAID medications, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like Indocin, Mobix, Naprosyn. But these are drugs that can worsen leaky gut. Is it possible that we may gain some short-term benefit in terms of pain alleviation, but then set patients up for worse problems later on?
Absolutely. Well, you know, the rule in my job is basically you have short-term goals and long-term goals, and we have to discuss them. The short-term goals are pretty much for people who come in, they're in pain. And when people are in pain, they can't function in terms of change or making long-term goals if they're really in pain. So the first thing to do is really figure out how do we handle pain without ruining five things down the line, downstream. And so NSAIDs, which happen to be very convenient for patients, where you can get them in any convenience store, and most physicians will prescribe them pretty easily, they're not so great for the gut of the human gut. They are irritative. They do decrease the strength of the lining of the stomach in particularly and put people at risk actually for GI ulcers. Even low-dose aspirin, which is very important for a whole host of health preventive issues such as heart disease, you know, you have a 1 in 1,000 risk of having a GI bleed on an NSAID, even if it's a low-dose baby aspirin. So, you know, you want to take these drugs very carefully. But when they're in, you know, there's a need for them, certainly I do use them. I just use them very, very sparingly, and I try to come up with alternatives. And there's other drugs that we use quite frequently. You know, proton pump inhibitors are a huge class of drugs that have been used remarkably in medicine over the last 10 years, and now we're finding that they block a whole host of very important nutrients in our body, such as B12, certainly calcium. I mean, I take care of osteoporosis and osteopenia every single day as a rheumatologic disorder. And, you know, one of the first things I try to do, depending, of course, on their health issues, is try to wean them off of some of these drugs that are causing more problems.
Unfortunately, this is sometimes a 1-2 punch because, as you know, sometimes when steroids are prescribed, which has to happen, you know, to sometimes turn off a serious inflammatory disorder, automatically they prescribe acid-blocking medications because we know steroids can cause ulcers, so they use this to block the acidity. And then you you can disturb the microbiome because you alter the acidity, you change the pH, and you got a change in your intestinal microbiome.
Correct. And as so much is true, that is, in medicine, we give one drug to chase another drug, to chase another drug, to chase another drug. So we're treating our drugs and the side effects from these drugs rather than treating the whole person. And so what we really do need to do is step back and say, how many of these drugs can we get off and safely substitute with appropriate other means, whether it's a substitute that coats the stomach, like a type of licorice tablet that we talk about in my practice, or peppermint oil? Are there other ways that we can protect the body in a very safe and effective way that pulls one drug off of the other, off of the other? Because essentially that's what we're doing, is we're just managing the side effects of other medications often, not always, but often. And I think we have a lot of polypharmacy in this country that causes, I believe the statistic is 40% of all hospital or ER admissions are for side effects from drugs.
Yikes.
And so we really need to think about other tools in our toolbox, other ways to manage illness and even prevent them, God forbid, prevent disease. And that would be really a wonderful thing for our healthcare system.
Would you think your practice has really changed in its character? You're seeing different outcomes now that you're applying these integrative techniques? Because I think you probably started off with your fellowship in rheumatology, and you know, you followed kind of the textbook way of treating patients with sometimes powerful medications. And at that point, you were not incorporating this holistic component. And now that you have done so, are you seeing better results?
Yeah, it's interesting. I started off pretty non-conventional. I mean, I was Western medicine. I used to drink 3 Diet Dr. Peppers a day, Oreos and Cheese Whiz for years. So, you know, I come from a place where I was on that side of the fence. And, you know, as I've seen myself change physically and I've seen my patients change, and, of course, the 2-year fellowship that I took really helped me get my confidence and really learn the scientific basis for a lot of foods and fruits and supplements and things that I really was not taught in medical school.
That's the Andrew Weil Integrative Medicine
Fellowship. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And it's an evidence-based program, which really was helpful for me, who's somewhat of a skeptic or a cynic, yeah. And did everything sort of tongue-in-cheek. But as I got to really understand it and saw the benefits up close and personal with my patients with a lot of these changes, you know, I convinced myself and my patients convinced me that this was really something that needs to be spread. This message has to be spread because there's a lot more out there we can use than just conventional medications all the time. As I say, it's not, it's necessary many times. So.
Well, if only for the empowerment component, because all too often patients go to the doctor's office and they stick out their tongue and they receive the sacrament, as it were, and there's not a lot that they can do to alter the course of their disease. It all comes from a prescription pad. And for many patients, they ask, well, what else can I do? And often, right. With doctors who are not knowledgeable about these aspects of treatment come up short and they say, well, the medications will take care of things or they won't. And then we'll go to more powerful medications. In this case,
right.
Patients can make lifestyle changes, proper exercise, physical therapy, the right diet and taking certain supplements.
Certainly, and a lot of patients, they're yearning from this from their medical doctors who really just don't have the training for it, and I don't fault them because in medical school we're really not taught this, so it goes back really way back in our training that we sort of need to fix the system. But, for instance, I see patients from a neurology group that sends me all their multiple sclerosis patients or their Alzheimer's patients because in our market today in medicine, really patients only have 15 minutes with their specialist and many with their internist. So, when you're outsourcing to someone who knows how to handle medications along with integrative lifestyle, I think it's really helpful not only to the patient but to the referring physician who doesn't have the time or perhaps the tools to do so. And so I think that, if there's people out there in communities that can handle this kind of management, I think people should look for it.
Is there any truth to it's one of these kind of legacy treatments really came about many, many years ago, the belief that nightshades have an impact on arthritis? Is there any scientific basis for that, or in your experience, has that made a difference for some of your patients?
Yeah, I get this question quite a bit. And actually, there's really no scientific basis. However, I will state that your body and how you feel, as my friend Dora Mullen, I know she's been on the show before, states, your body and how you feel is data. And really how you feel means something. So when patients are on nightshades, whichever they may be, whether it's eggplant or tomato or peppers, if your body doesn't feel right, that means something. And we need to listen to the body and make changes that are appropriate. And so whether it's nightshades, which really, as I mentioned, doesn't have any legitimate, evidence-based medicine, I should say legitimate, it's just probably hasn't been done if there's a large study.
It's more of a folkloric or small scale.
Yeah, the studies that have been done,
anecdotal.
They do not support it.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, the nutrients that you get from those wonderful vegetables are so valuable that to cut someone off of all their nightshade vegetables really would leave them, I think, with less choices to eat wonderful food that are helpful to the human body and to autoimmune disease prevention.
So we can say different strokes for different folks. Some people may, and I have to say some of my patients swear there's a difference and it has made a difference, but it probably is one of those maybe 20% things. It's not infallible.
Right. And you know what? The placebo plays a very large part in a lot of what we do, not only in Western medicine, but in integrative medicine. And there's no way to really measure that. But the way I see it is if you're going to do a placebo effect, you might as well do it on the side of safety and have it as part of an integrative approach where there's less toxicity involved. So, again, what your body feels from making changes in lifestyle can really be remarkable and cause no side effects. So it's a wonderful way to go.
Any take on the paleo diet? Because in MS, for example, Dr. Walls has been making waves extolling the benefits of a paleo diet. In other words, everybody has a different version of the paleo diet. There's probably no one single paleo diet, but the notion being that it's modern foods that are the culprit in autoimmune diseases.
Right. Right. Well, you know, I took a bunch of, and I was an anthropology minor, and I tend to
think
of everything.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I was an anthropology
major,
so yeah, that interests me.
Yeah, I wish I could have been a major, but I had to do pre-med. But essentially, you know, and even I put this into my business, The Smart Human, which is, you know, we'll talk about later, but The Smart Human, it was named because of the anthropologic perspective that I like to look at everything with, because you can't look at our bodies and our moment in time here with perfumes and fancy shoes as singular. You have to think of how we evolved, how we've been on this planet for over 2.5 million years, how chemicals, for instance, which is what I talk about a lot, have really come into our lives over the last 100 to 200 years in such an enormous way that to think we can, so to speak, evolve over the last couple hundred years to handle a lot of these chemicals is really does not make sense. I mean, so we need to look back at where we've come from to go forward. I think that, you know, when you think about the paleo diet, you want to think about what is our gene pattern, what have we been eating as human beings for the last couple hundred thousand years versus a couple million years, and try at least to go back to that way of living, and paleo really represents that to some degree. It's a little extreme for some patients. You know, it's very hard to maintain a strict paleo diet, which, you know, removes all grains, all dairy, all sugar. You know, it's a very hard thing to keep up in this world where everywhere you look, there's a convenience store and fast food place, and you go out to dinner and everything's, you know, got tons of salt in it and sugars and gluten. So, you know, I say to my patients, if you want to go with it, I will certainly guide you. My husband's paleo and he feels great, and he actually lost quite a bit of weight in the process. But I'm, you know, I enjoy my dairy and my sugar here and there, so I can't say that I'm a full paleo. But I respect the notion of how it really lowers inflammation, how it's clean living food. I mean, it's basically clean food, which is what I promote all the time.
Okay, now you got me curious. What's The Smart Human? That's a project you're working on?
It's a big project, actually. So I started the company called The Smart Human LLC because I did quite a bit of lecturing on environmental chemicals and how everyday chemicals that we eat with and we breathe in, like air chemicals and, you know, from new products that are in our homes and carpeting and air fresheners, you know, the cosmetic industry, personal care products industry. So essentially I started this company to encompass all of the work that I'm doing with environmental health, including trying to change the curriculum of New Jersey and try to add this information into human health and biology courses. So I'm working on a pilot with Princeton High School to do that. But the idea is that the smart human is that we are empowered to be smart. We are human anthropologically. We are different from other beings, and we need to think of ourselves not just from the past, but just in the future and how we go forward. I try to teach my patients and through the Smart Human on Facebook and Twitter that it's not about regret. It's not about what you did, you know, for the last 20 years. It's not about all your bad habits. It's about what you're choosing to change moving forward. And there's nothing judgmental about it because, of course, you know, I have nothing to stand on. I get my hair done and I, you know, eat my junk food occasionally. But essentially, it's about embracing changes that are healthier from a chemical environment standpoint and how to do that practically and reasonably with limited costs. And that's what I try to teach people through this smarthuman.com.
Well, Smart Human sounds a little bit like intelligent medicine, but it's different enough, so I don't think it's a trademark infringement, so I won't go after
right.
you. But you, obviously
right.
you have a mission along with treating patients of getting the word out about you know, natural ways of staying well and treating
yeah.
diseases. So what's today's intelligent medicine call to action? How do we find out more about the work you're doing?
Oh, I appreciate that. So essentially, my office practice is under aleycohenmd.com, aleycohenmd.com, which tells about my practice, telemedicine, and all the other work I'm doing here. And then, of course, The Smart Human, which I'll be writing a book on my own, which I'm pleased to work with Dr. Wildley doing the foreword for that, as well as co-editing the integrative medicine text that he works with, Integrative Environmental Health. So that's through The Smart Human to get all that information. That's on Facebook at The Smart Human and on Twitter at AileyCohenMD at The Smart Human handle. The website will be up hopefully within the next couple of weeks, and that's how I'm doing my curriculum legal work and lectures. I do quite a bit of lecturing to communities and schools and hospitals. So that's the place to reach me. Yeah.
And to paraphrase the President of the United States, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, but they can still do a consult with you, do a telemedicine consult. And
absolutely.
Right.
I'm not in the business of taking anyone away from their doctors that they love. I'm there to integrate and give my opinion to already structured medical regimen.
So if you have a rheumatological disorder, and the people can sometimes weigh in and say, hey, here's my records, and you know, maybe you can give me this unique perspective on the integrative elements of treatment that might augment.
Yeah, it's just a different perspective. It doesn't mean anyone's going to jump over to me. It just means that... you know, giving a different perspective with a different set of eyes on the situation.
Great. All right. Well, look, a fascinating discussion. There's lots more to take up with you. And perhaps, you know, in future we'll do a special focus on the smart human and talk a little bit more about environmental toxicity, because we just sort of skimmed the surface of that.
Right.
Today's theme, integrative rheumatology, our guest, Dr. Ailey Cohen. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on your pioneering work. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.